kickoff live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. We're going to get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets as we move forward here on the program, getting you set for the Giants and Broncos Sunday night football as the Giants enter that contest 0-5. The Broncos are 3-1. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of that contest. Yes, Sunday night football.
Wow, I was going to get to the stadium early.
Well, you could still get to the stadium early. You can take some rendezvous through the Mile High to get yourself set before the game. You have a little flexibility entering Sunday.
You know, but people have told me that breathing is a very difficult thing to do in Denver when you're exercising and exerting yourself physically. So can I even do my 5 miles if I'm in Denver?
I have faith in you. The reason I have faith is because the durability that you built up over the years, over the decades, Paul, I don't think the thin air is going to bother you.
I hope not.
I think you'll be in good shape.
I've never been to Denver before.
That was going to be my next follow-up question about whether or not you scouted the area around the stadium, what's walkable, what's doable,
I have.
So forth. Okay.
I have. I've used Google Maps,
Very nice.
I have scouted out the area. I do that for every place.
That's what I figured. Yes.
That the road trips ahead to. And there's enough of a walkable area there, but what I don't really know is how is it going to affect the breathing? Everybody keeps telling me about this. They put it in my head now that it's going to be a problem. So it may wind up being, even if it's not, because people have convinced me that it will be.
Like I said, I don't think you're going to be exhausting as much pressure on yourself as perhaps
okay.
the players will during the course of the game. I think you'll be okay. All right, we'll get into Paul's whereabouts in terms of the stadium and then some moving forward on the program. Let's get to some Giants news. The Giants just announced that Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, one of their starting corners, is suspended indefinitely. Ben McAdoo spoke to the media on Wednesday. He had mentioned that he met with DRC on Wednesday, and after that meeting, DRC chose to leave the team. There's no specific label as to what this suspension is about, but we do know right now it is indefinite, and Dante Dion has been promoted to take his spot from the practice.
To clarify, DRC left the facility. He did not, quote, leave the team. That gives you the impression that he's quit, he's retired. That's not the issue. He left the facility. Make sure we got that
correct.
Part clear.
He did. He left the facility. He was not with the team at the facility as
right.
opposed to making a declaration that he was leaving
correct.
The team.
But that's different.
No, it certainly is different. That's a fair clarification. The bottom line is, though, his suspension is indefinite. And he won't be suiting up against the Denver Broncos. It actually would have been, Paul, his first game back in Denver
yes.
since signing with the Giants in 2014. He was with Denver for one season. He helped them get to the Super Bowl in which they lost to Seattle. Now, what this means in terms of the roster. I just mentioned Dante Dion, and similar to Travis Rudolph, Paul, and this is another player we were talking about throughout the preseason, a guy who was sort of on the bubble about whether or not he was going to make the roster, somebody that now has an opportunity to make a statement and take advantage of his playing time.
Well, once again, the Giants are pretty pleased with the acquisition of Ross Cockrell from the Steelers, which, as you guys will remember, right before opening day, or the final cutdown, actually, it was Cockrell's acquisition that prompted them to waive Dante Dion. Dion actually thought he was on the team,
yeah.
and then in the final hour before the final 53 came out, they made the deal with the Steelers, and that bumped Dion off the team. And then, of course, they were able to get him back on the practice squad within the first 24 hours after the cut. He has kept his spirits up. He's excited. He's happy. He's looking forward to it. I remember him telling me, you know, hey, you know what? You just got to roll with the punches. That's business. He didn't take any slight to what had happened. He understood that, okay, this is a veteran guy who's been in the league a couple of years. They made a trade for him. You know, how can I expect to have that roster spot? This guy has an accomplished resume. So he's had a good attitude, and he has worked hard. And they're going to reward him now with an opportunity to be on the 53. I still would think that Apple and Jenkins and Cockrell will be your starting three corners in terms of the rotation and the mix. But that doesn't mean Dion won't get an opportunity at the very least on special teams.
Special teams, yeah. I mean, I think that's a key component of where he can contribute because, I mean, remember, with Odell Beckham and Dwayne Harris hurt, Paul, you know, they ate into the depth chart even on special teams, specifically in the return game. And the reason I bring that up is they were working Dante Dion in as a return option
yes.
during the course of the preseason.
Mixed results.
Correct.
You know,
in terms
mixed
of ball
results.
Security, that was a big issue.
But again, you can't question his effort. He's, you know, one of those diminutive guys who knows that he's got to play big. He's got to show a big heart. He's got to show extra effort. That's the only way he can compete at this level. He understands that. And his foot pedal to the metal every single time. And right now, that's the kind of injection maybe the Giants could use.
Well, there's a lot of young players now on this roster who were itching to get on the 53 once the preseason ended, and an opportunity to perhaps make a statement and, you know, put some more on film to give the coaching staff a reason to keep them on the roster and perhaps give them more opportunities. A guy like Deion, I'll always remember that Buffalo Bills preseason game a few years ago, Paul, where they specifically went after him when Deion was put on the outside. And Spags
in one-on-one coverage.
On one-on-one coverage. And Spags even admitted that put him in a tough spot.
Bad spot.
Buffalo took advantage of that. So they have to be careful in where they utilize him and where they put him in the mix. The slot makes sense as that nickel corner. But remember, you know, Eli Apple was mixed in and out of the game. Ross Cockrell, you figure Michael Hunter, perhaps the first options on the outside
Hunter
before they
be
turn
too.
To a guy like Dante Deion.
Now, of the leading four or the top four receivers on the depth chart for the Broncos, Emmanuel Sanders at 5'11 is the only sub-6 footer. The other three guys, Thomas and Latimer and Fowler, are all 6 feet or taller. Those guys become a more difficult matchup for Deion, no doubt about that. Michael Hunter physically has a longer reach and a taller frame, better suited to guard against those kinds of guys.
And the Broncos, just overall, their tone is set on the ground, much more so than it is through the air. They're actually still looking for their breakout game in terms of their passing, because they just have not had to rely on it. They have not been really put in a position, face it. They had a rough game against the Bills, which is their lone loss, where they turned the ball over, and that really changed field
Simeon
position.
Simeon threw 4 picks.
So that obviously was a huge game changer. Outside of that, though, if you look at their 3 victories, Paul, and the numbers show it, they're number 3 in rushing yards per game. They're also very good in defending the run. They're number 1 in the NFL. So it's really been the trenches that has set the tone for the Broncos, and they try to put Trevor Siemian in a comfortable spot where they're like, we don't need you to throw the ball 35 to 40 times because we're more than comfortable with our three-headed monster on the ground.
Well, let's look at it this way. If you're the Giants and you want to figure out how in the world can we win this game, look at the fact that in the last 2 weeks, the Broncos have failed to score 20 points offensively, even though they beat the Raiders in their last game.
Because they've barely given up anything.
Okay, so look at that. The other thing you want to look at is Siemian in his 4 games this year has been sacked twice, once, 3 times, once, 4 times, twice. That Broncos offensive line, they may run block real well, but they have trouble with pass protection. So, you know, if you want to be Steve Spagnuolo for a minute and try to diagram a defensive game plan, you might just start coming heavy with the pressure.
Well, the Broncos have given up just as many sacks as the Giants on the season. They're actually both equivalent in terms of surrendering 13, which is tied for the 14th most in the NFL. And the Broncos, you know, I'm glad you brought this up, because Denver is an example of a team where, yes, their run blocking is stronger than their pass protection, but Denver had issues like this last season, Paul, and they took the approach of changing some of their offensive linemen, right? Mm-hmm. They drafted Garrett Bowles in the first round, okay? Mm-hmm. So he's their starting left tackle. They also signed Ronald Leary from the Dallas Cowboys. They brought him in to play right guard. They also signed Menelik Watson from the Oakland Raiders to play right tackle. They made changes to 3 offensive line positions.
How great has that turned out?
Mixed
Not
results.
So good.
As right now, run blocking, you can't complain.
No.
The numbers show that. They're averaging over 140 yards rushing per game, so they're doing something right on the ground. But the reason I bring that up is, while everybody says the aggressive approach is to change offensive linemen left and right, even when you make the changes, and Denver's a good example where they made changes in a combination of rookies as well as polished veterans that they brought in, Paul. But at the same time, you could change all 5 offensive linemen, and the results are not necessarily going to become a 180 from one season to another.
No, not at all. And look, the Broncos have always been a good running football team.
Going back to Terrell Davis.
That hasn't changed for a long time. So for you to tell me, and I get it, that they're one of the leading rushing teams in the NFL, well, guess what? They changed out all those linemen, and that didn't change. They're still what they are. The pass protection is still a big problem for them. So despite the changes, the impact or the desired effect that they were hoping to gain did not come to fruition. Period. And I emphasize that after He just said it because, folks, you got to understand, this was not a great year to start building a pass protection-style offensive line. It just wasn't. Garrett Bowles himself's coming off of an ankle injury already that he had a few weeks ago.
That was a high ankle sprain.
And so, you know, that set him back some for sure.
And they also rotate their left guards, which is interesting because most teams don't necessarily do that. Matt Garcia and Alan Barber are the two guys that they usually mix in and out throughout the course of a contest.
They overpaid for Leary from the Cowboys, and he's already got four penalties in four games. How great's that? I mean, you know, you think the people in Denver are thrilled with that move right now? Or are they saying they overpaid for a guy? I think they get it. They overpaid for a guy, and I think they know it.
Well, that's what we were talking about throughout the course of the offseason, that, yes, there were free agent options, but you also need to determine whether or not the investment is worth it because you're going to get a return or you're not going to get a return in the long run.
And I think everybody knew, based on the free agent crop that was available and how many teams were looking for them, that the prices were going to be so far inflated that you would never get true value out of your buck. And that's really what's happened to all the teams who reconstructed their offensive lines with free agency. None of them have truly gotten equal value for the buck on any of these guys.
Detroit is another team that comes to mind. They also were very aggressive in free agency. They also lost their
starting
left tackle. Minnesota is another team. And I think those teams have made some strides, but where the biggest strides to me have been made, Paul, is on the ground.
Right.
With the run blocking, much
pass
more so than the pass protection.
Has not really improved around
actually,
the league.
And we're hitting on an interesting point where it's been a theme across the NFL that a lot of teams went out and the goal was we want to give our quarterbacks more time to throw the football, but the truth is the sacks, it seems, are up across the board and the running games have improved, but if you can't protect your quarterback, there's going to be games where you're not able to attack on the ground, and then you become one-dimensional, and that's going to put yourself in a very tough spot.
Which is why, while I respect the heck out of the Denver Broncos right now as a football team, they can certainly lay egg, as they did against the Bills, you know, just a couple of games ago. This is not an unbeatable team. I remember that 13-0 Broncos team that came into Giants Stadium, and the Giants bit them in the rear end and ruined their undefeated season when Amani Toomer caught a long touchdown pass in the final moments. You know, this is not an unthinkable game, but, you know, obviously the Giants are taking on a lot of water themselves.
Well, and I think that gets us to the opposite side of the ball before we open up the phone lines at 201-939-4513. Just real quickly, in terms of Denver's defense, Paul, and this is where I think the biggest challenge is for the Giants entering this game. I agree with you. Denver is not the type of offense that's going to light up the scoreboard. They are prone to some turnovers, and they're not going to all of a sudden air things out because they like to methodically wear out a team time of possession with the ground game. But now the Giants are going up against the number one overall defense in the NFL in terms of total yardage. They're not number one in scoring.
Right.
But you have a team that does not give up a lot of explosive plays. You have a team that gets after the quarterback, is well-disciplined, and now the Giants are coming in without Odell Beckham, without Brandon Marshall. Mm-hmm. We have no idea what's going to happen with Sterling Shepard because he's day-to-day, and throwing in a number of players that have had experience in the system but have not had regular season experience. So my biggest question in this game is, are the Giants going to be able to move the football consistently from start to finish?
They're going to have to get turnovers to acquire really good field position if they're going to be able to get some points and enough points to win this game. I give you two numbers, Lance. Opponents have a 26% third down conversion rate against this Broncos defense, second best in the league. That is a ferocious number.
Yep.
Okay. Again, I don't know how many of those are third and shorts offhand. I don't have that like in my quick notes here. Another thing is they have yet to allow a rushing touchdown this season. 2.4 yards per carry, and a long run of only 21 yards. boy, they really know how to get it done out there. I can't tell you that there's a weakness in this Denver Broncos defense at all. In fact, if there is one thing about them, they will give you the short pass. And for teams that go into a Denver game, what's the first thing every coach says? We'll take what they give us. We'll take what they give us. Because they almost feel as though they'd have an easier time robbing a bank than driving the ball against the Broncos defense.
Well,
so we'll take what they give us. Well, you know, that mentality hasn't worked well for the Giants offense in a couple of years.
No, well, we've talked about this every week about trying to take advantage of opposing weaknesses, and normally they have not been able to capitalize on that. So I completely understand where you're coming from, but just to highlight your point about only being able to maybe get some short yardage gains, if you look at the secondary on paper, and I'm not a big paper guy, but right. If there's any team, Paul, on paper that translates to the field, I think it's fair to say that the Denver defense mm-hmm. does that effectively. Case in point, first of all, they have three Pro Bowlers in the secondary out of their three corners I'm talking about, as well as their two safeties. In addition to that, four of their five defensive starters in the secondary already each have an interception. And they're only four games into the season. Tlaib's got an interception, which he returned for a touchdown against the Cowboys. Chris Harris Jr. has an interception. Bradley Roby, their nickel corner, has an interception. And so does Justin Simmons, their second-year safety. Darian Stewart, who's the veteran of the group, is the lone guy that hasn't had the turnover.
I just looked up one stat that I had written down during the course of my scout during this week. Aqib Tlaib has given up 12 completions this season. Three of them went for touchdowns, believe it or not. You want to smile at a stat that
okay.
might show a little bit of a bruise in their defense? I mean, that's not a good percentage. Three touchdowns on 12 completions? That's not too good. Of course, he's only given up 12 completions, which
is a relatively small number.
That's
yes,
not a bad number.
But compared to the ratio of touchdowns, I see your point. But
I mean, there are some corners that go a whole season giving up three or less touchdowns. He's given up three touchdown passes in four games.
What it really gets back to, though, is if the Giants want to make those explosive plays and they want to be able to maybe stretch out this Denver defense, are they going to get the separation? And we've talked about that a lot over the course mm-hmm. of the last few seasons. Will Travis Rudolph, will Ed Egan, will the tight ends, will these guys be able to get the separation necessary to allow Eli time to throw the football?
Will the offensive line give Eli enough time throw the football? I mean, I just got done taping my segment for the MSG First and 10 show, and I asked Carl Banks, how much confidence can you have in this line when, even though they ran for 150 yards last week, which, by the way, was an outstanding number, they gave up five sacks against the Chargers after not giving up any sacks in the previous two games. So, terrific run the ball, but not so good in pass protection again, which was the opposite of the previous 2 weeks when the pass protection was really pretty good and they couldn't run it. Well, they had 90 2 weeks ago. That wasn't terrible. But
it's fluctuating.
You know what I mean.
I completely understand.
I don't know what to expect, and there's a chance that they might even shuffle the offensive line's lineup again this week. That's still possible. It's not out of the question. It's not like Coach McAdoo has settled on my five best, and these are the guys who are going to be at these positions. He's perfectly willing at this point to still have guys compete at practice to find out who he's going to put on the field.
Well, because of Jerry's health, because of Richburg's health, whether
well,
or not
Jerry's
Fluker,
hammy. He
correct.
Had come out of the game again
exactly.
last week.
Fluker
came in
him
and
then,
played well in the yep. run-blocking game. Had some issues with the pass block.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat. All right, let's open up the phone lines, everything up for a debate here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Nick is in Bridgewater. He gets us going. Nick, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. Hey, Paul. How you guys doing today?
Hi.
Doing all right, Nick. What do you got for us?
All right. So the first thing I want to get off my chest is I am not happy with this coach. I think his play calling is vanilla. I think benching DRC for right now is the worst timing for Dudas, and I just think he's lost control of the locker room. Just so we're clear, I didn't want him as a head coach to begin with, even from last year.
Well, in terms of losing the locker room, I know that's been a big theme throughout the media ever since the Giants have gotten off to a slow start. And Justin Pugh, Paul, was asked about it a lot. And, you know, we've been in the locker room over the last few days. It's hard to label that a team has been lost in the locker room when you see everybody at practice and everybody alert and everybody seems to be invested in the game plan. So I think that narrative tends to get thrown out when teams struggle, but more often than not, there's not necessarily a whole lot of substance behind it.
I think what you have to do, you know, for those of you who can't be at practice every day like we are, you have to look at the games, and it's not about bad execution or poor execution or lack of execution. What you want to see are guys give an effort. Are guys playing hard? Are they going after it? And even if they don't get there, even if they drop the ball, even if a guy breaks a tackle on them, what you want to see are guys who are at least playing the game like they're supposed to play, even if it doesn't work out and the results are not what you want. The last thing in the world you want to see, and I've been doing this now 35 years, I've seen teams that gave up on a coach, and you could tell right away by looking at the game tape that, oh my goodness, look at that, half his team is loafing. You know, they're not going after it. They've quit. When you see that, now you have a case to make that maybe the coach and the players are not on the same page, and this is a huge problem. I have not seen that so far. Now, could it happen? Nobody knows the answer to that. But I haven't seen it. I don't think you have.
I think if you look at the first five games, and first of all, the last three have been highly contested affairs. There's been examples of lack of execution. I don't think that's a stretch.
There's no way you can say the Giants have quit on the coach when they've come from behind in the fourth quarter 3 weeks in a row and taken the lead only to lose it. You know, if the team quits on a coach, they're not coming back in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Fair point. Now, my second thing is, guys, and Paul, I got to say I'm very disappointed with JPP. He wanted his big paycheck. He got it, and he's been ineffective all season.
You know, I will say this, very disappointing start to the year for him. I like the guy a lot. I do think he gives effort. But I would say I agree with the production. It has not been where it's supposed to be. But as I said on my FAN spot, WFAN spot, just before, and I don't know if you're local, but I said it on the radio.
I did hear it.
All right, and I said it before. Of the 11 starting positions on defense, I asked Joe and Evan, name me how many guys are performing at least at the level they performed last season. And the only guy I came up with was Janoris Jenkins. I think every other spot of the starting 11, there has been a drop-off in play. And I'm not really going to hold Goodson to that because he wasn't playing.
He only had
Shepherd.
13 snaps.
He's also missed some time. It's unfair to hold him responsible. It's unfair to hold Tomlinson responsible. He steps in for Hankins. He's actually looked pretty good as a rookie. But if you want to just say the other nine spots of the starting defense.
You don't think DRC has actually played well?
DRC was sensational last year. He was on the all-NFL team. He was that good. And why? Part of the reason was because he was creating turnovers. That's a big part of what you do as a defensive back. It's not just covering guys. It's creating opportunities for the rest of the team by turning the ball over. The Giants have one pick so far, and it's Thompson in the end zone the other day.
And two fumble recoveries.
That's not enough.
Just have three takeaways. That's it.
So if you want to take those two guys, the two rookies out, or the Goodson and Tomlinson out.
Well, Thompson, too, I think you got to take
out. All right, you want to take him out, too?
Darian
fine.
Darian played two games
last
year.
But Darian Thompson, even in this first month of the season, has not played as well as Andrew Adams did last year.
I agree with you. But my point is, if you're going to compare 16 to 17, so you've got to have a sample size
from
16.
Take three guys out.
Three guys.
Take three guys out.
Fine.
The other eight. Janoris Jenkins is the only guy who's playing as well as he did last year. The other seven guys have all taken a downward turn. How do you explain that? How do you predict that? You can't.
Paul, you're absolutely right on that one.
Yeah, it's the lack of production across the board, and appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in, Nick. I mean, we've been talking about this throughout the first five games. You know, everybody's trying to understand how does a defense that was highly ranked and highly productive last season take such a significant dip, especially in terms of stopping the run? Well, when you compare the production of the individuals in 16 to the production of the individuals in 17, it's really not that surprising. Another guy, I mean, you were talking about DRC being opportunistic in 16. Landon Collins was opportunistic in 16. He hasn't been opportunistic in 17.
I know. It's inexplicable. Even a rational, logical person who looked at the team and said, okay, you know what? You're expecting too much for them to be the best defense in the NFC again. That's too much to expect. There's going to be a few guys who may not play as well. Three or four guys won't play as well as they did last year, and you'll take a drop to maybe fifth or sixth defense in the NFC. That's perfectly logical, reasonable, and rational to expect. But to go from the best defense in the NFC to the bottom? Come on.
That was a complete 180.
Come on.
Yeah.
That's just absolutely as bizarre a prediction as you could possibly come up with. If anybody said that to you, and I don't care how much you thought that they may have overachieved last year, to say that they'd go from worst to first, defensively speaking, with the guys they have on that roster. And also, we're not talking about a bunch of senior citizens here. There are a bunch of guys on this defense who are in the prime of their careers. It's not a bunch of 45-year-olds playing defense on this team where all of a sudden in 1 year they lost it. It's insane to think that they would have dropped off this far across the board. It makes no sense.
No, I'm with you there. The statistical trends to go from one end of the spectrum to the other is very surprising. However, with respect to the record, now the record is surprising as well, but I wanted to point this out, and I'm curious your perspective on this too. Justin Pugh, to me, had a great quote yesterday.
Okay.
I don't know if you picked up on it. He was asked about whether or not he was surprised of what occurred and how the team could stay motivated. And he said, the NFL will humble you real quick.
Yes.
That's a direct quote. I'm not paraphrasing.
And he was
that.
Right.
100% right. And he was reflecting on the close games that the Giants played in 16 and the close games that they've played in the last 3 weeks.
Okay.
You can even include the first two. So I went back and did some numbers.
Yes.
2015, Paul. Different roster. The roster is much more similar between 16 and 17, but I'm bringing up the 15 numbers to make this point.
Okay.
2015, they played 11 one-possession games.
Okay.
Their record in those 11 games, 3-8. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
2016, a year later, they also played 11 one-possession games. And what I mean by one-possession games is these are games that are decided by 7 points or less, just for clarification. Complete 180. They were 8-3. In 2016. 3-8 in 15, 8-3 in 16. The reason I'm bringing that up is that is how minute the differences are in wins and losses when you're a team that has made a name for yourself in close games. Now, in 2017, sample size is not as big. They've only played 3 games that are under that umbrella. They've lost all 3. So we're almost following the 15 trend again. It's alternated. 15 bad, 16 recovery, 17 again, struggling with closing out those close games. So I'm not trying to downgrade the 11-5 record, Paul. That's not why I'm bringing that up. But I think maybe what's overlooked from last year is how difficult some of those games were in terms of closing it out and how one play, one lack of an interception, one lack of a fumble recovery, one lack of a third down conversion is the difference of an 11-5 record last year, Paul, perhaps being 8-8, if you look at it through a fair lens, no?
Yeah, but then you said to yourself during the offseason that they thought they had made some significant additions and improvements on offense that should counteract any balance of lady luck that might work against them.
Because of the makeup of the roster, you're saying.
Right.
More continuity. And I don't disagree with you, but I think we also need to go by our eye test. Despite the improvement of the roster, which clearly it was, and the production was on defense, still with that being said, Paul, they were not blowing out everybody last year.
No.
I know that doesn't necessarily happen in the NFL.
It's
but
the way of the league. The quicksand of mediocrity.
There were a lot of games, and I brought this up on the Giants Radio Network postgame show with Bob and Carl on Sunday after the Chargers game. I mean, if you go back to 16, and there were a lot of impressive victories because of the takeaways and the opportunistic victories, but let's just go back to 16
before you even do that,
yeah.
6 fourth-quarter comeback wins authored by Eli Manning, which was second in the league to Matt Stafford and the Lions, who had 8 of them. I mean, that was Eli. I know the defense had a lockdown in the final minute a number of times as well, but Eli authored these fourth-quarter comebacks with an offense that was supposed to be less talented and less skilled than the one that they put on the field for him this year. So if he was able to do that with those guys, shouldn't he have been able to do more with these guys? Now that they expressed improvement on the offensive line, they got a healthy Shane Vereen back, they drafted Ingram, they signed Marshall, they signed Ellison. You know, should that not have translated into something?
Based on paper, yeah. I don't think that's a stretch. I think also from a reasonable perspective, your point about the defense, you can't just assume that it was going to come back top three, top five in every statistical category. But at the same
time, six?
You didn't think that it was going to go from then now bottom five. I mean,
worst case scenario, top 10.
Yeah.
Worst case scenario, if two or three guys have like season-ending injuries, so maybe you're a top 10 defense.
But with that being said, going back to your point about Eli Manning orchestrating those fourth quarter comebacks, if you just peruse last year's schedule, okay, Baltimore, they beat 27-23. You have a defensive stop late in that game after Odell Beckham gets the long touchdown.
Understood.
Okay, the Rams game, they won 17-10 in London. Case Keenum and the Rams, remember, they're down in the red zone. People forget about that game.
Well.
DRC, interception in the corner, okay? So your defense was on the field. Eagles victory after the bye 2 weeks later, 28-23. Carson Wentz intends it to go to Jordan Matthews in the end zone. Mm-hmm. Ball's knocked away, right? That's three straight weeks, one possession games, defense late on the field,
that's
making
true.
A stop.
But Eli had to get them
he
that
did.
Lead.
He did, but the reason why I bring up the defense, Paul, let's not overlook the fact that a lot of losses this season as a result of the defense being on the field and the opposing offense being able to move the football and get in position for a game-winning field goal or a game-winning score.
Well,
you can't dismiss that.
I'm going to counter you, though.
Feel free to.
Two games in a row, fourth quarter with the game on the line, Brad Wing shanks a punt and gives the other team most awesome field position you could imagine.
Well, that gets back.
That's not on the defense.
No, that gets back to complimentary football. Okay?
Right.
And you have to take that into consideration.
You have
to. Just like if an offense turned the ball over and gave the defense bad field position.
Last year, Brad Wing was sensational. This year, he has back-to-back crunch-time fourth-quarter punts that basically hand-wrapped and gift-wrapped, you know, those other offenses an opportunity where the defense was just so incredibly stressed out. They had been on the field forever, and now you're giving the other team an opportunity to beat you with great field position. How much can you ask of them? So I'm not totally on board with what you're saying here.
Well, the Chargers game, when Eli Manning had the sack, strip fumble, and then the Chargers essentially take over in the red zone. Okay.
What are you going to do?
I'm not saying that that's on the defense. The two previous weeks, Paul, despite Brad Wing shank punt, we're talking about.
What were those punts?
And Alshon
28
Jeffrey.
28 yards and 18 yards?
But they still had to get into
field. Yuck.
Paul, they still had to get into field goal range, though. Still
61 yards in Philadelphia?
Well, but that Alshon Jeffrey play.
Absolutely.
What about the
kick? Made it a possible kick. Because without that play, it's a 75-yard kick. And I don't think he's making one from 75.
That's a difference. What about the Bucs?
But reasonably speaking, what's the percentage of a guy making a 61-yard field goal?
I'm not saying that it's all on the defense. That's not my point. I agree with you. There's been issues with all facets.
Well, that's the problem. There are issues with all facets. That's why they are 0-5.
But there were issues in 16 that you could point to where the offense didn't do enough or special teams didn't do enough, and the defense still got the job done.
Well,
still found a way to make the plays that I was referring to during that game.
And in a lot of those cases, when you're talking about the defense, as you just mentioned, they were not put in a tenuous spot on those final drives. Because even though the offense was not running the clock out like they should with a four-minute offense that they don't have, when they would punt it away and give it away, at least Brad Wing was putting the other team in a significant disadvantage by telling them, guess what? You want to beat our defense with a game-winning drive? You're going to have to take it 65 yards. And that happened on a regular basis in 2016. That's not happening now.
Well, here's one thing that I'll throw out to counter.
Sure.
In fairness of facts, that Eagles game that I referenced, the 28-23 victory, Eli Manning gets picked off by Jordan Hicks late in that game. Where did the Eagles take over, Paul?
Yeah.
Took over at the Giants 34.
They had outstanding.
Is that not favorable field position?
It was a fluky play.
Well, it was. But the point is, I think there were some examples, if you look a little closely at 16, where the offense didn't put the defense in a good
position. But the Eagles also needed a touchdown to win that game.
Well, game situations are going to fluctuate. But if they
need a touchdown to win as opposed to a field goal to win, it's a heck of a lot easier to then say, well, guess what? The defense is under less pressure.
Less pressure, yes.
When they have to give up a touchdown to lose the game.
Well, but 34 yards, though, away from the end zone is still putting pressure on your defense.
I don't even know why we're volleying back and forth here.
We're simply making a comparison of 16 and 17. I don't think there's anything wrong with reflecting on that.
16 was a whole lot more fun.
Well, that may be the truth, and I think the fan base would agree. But this is when you reflect and you look at why teams are not repeating their successes from the previous season. Digest.
Look,
relax.
Here's the bottom line, okay? Football is a spider web of things. It has a domino effect every single time you hit one of those little squares. And that's really why teams wind up with the records that they wind up with. Because so many things are tied together for either one of us to sit here and pick out one particular facet and say they're not doing the job right is so wrong and so irresponsible of both of us. Because the spider web that is the National Football League and that is a game plan and that is the circumstances of events that can change the course of a game on any given Sunday make it foolish for us to even isolate one area of the game, because that's simply not the way the NFL and football works.
Well, my initial point was having to deal with the parity of the NFL. That was the whole premise.
And that's true.
That was,
as I call
premise.
It, the quicksand of mediocrity.
Yes, exactly. And the fact that even in years where your team goes 11-5, you cannot lose sight on how many close games it took to get to 11-5.
Let me tell you, folks.
That's the bigger point here.
There's not a chance in the world that last year's 11-win Giants team has any chance of winning 2 out of 10 against the Bill Parcells teams that were habitually winning 10 or more games during the late 80s into the 1990 season. They'd be lucky to win 2 out of 10 games against those teams, because football had its golden era in the 70s and 80s, not in the 2000s.
See, you don't like to make comparisons, and then you wind up going back into the archives a minute later.
I had to resist, essentially. Well, you brought up.
I am guilty of doing that. I am guilty, and I will take full guilt on that.
Okay.
I'm not shying away from it. I brought up this subject.
You brought up the pond of parity.
I did.
I call it the quicksand of mediocrity.
Well, we can throw out as much lovely phrases as we'd like. The truth is, that's the validity of the NFL. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. 201-939-4513. Will is in Atlanta. Will, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Can you hear me?
Hear you loud and clear, Will. What do you got for us?
Well, first of all, I just want to say, you know, good coach, you're talking about Bill Parcells' teams would win all the time. Good coaches, the players play for good coaches. They get the players to play for them. I don't know how they do it, but good coaches just get the players to play. If the players go, if a team goes 11-5 one year and the next year goes 2-14, whatever, you need to look at the coaches. They can't get the players to play for them. That's the bottom line. That's my opinion. But that's not why I called up. The reason I called up is to talk about Davis Webb. We drafted him last year. And
this year.
The way we're, pardon me?
This year.
Yeah.
You said last year. Yeah. This year.
I'm sorry, this year.
That's okay.
But this past year is what I meant. The way the Giants are going right now, they're going to have a very high draft pick. And you listen to everybody, and I talk about these quarterbacks that are coming out of college. What the Giants need to do is to find out if Davis Webb is going to be their quarterback going forward. If not, they need to draft one of those quarterbacks. And to do that, what they need to do, in my opinion, is to start playing him. Now, I don't know when or I don't know how much, but they certainly need to start playing him to see if he's going to be the quarterback. You know, put him in the fourth quarter, put him in the, you know, the third quarter, whatever. You know, do this starting now. Do it starting game 10. I don't know. But they need to find out if he's going to be the quarterback. My opinion.
Well, I don't think you're necessarily going to learn much about a quarterback if you just sprinkle him in garbage time in the fourth quarter. I think sometimes you need another season or two to truly see what the true potential is of that quarterback. And I don't think that's going to happen. And I'm not saying you're recommending it, but it's not going to happen 0-5 into the season. Maybe if they really start to struggle, Paul, and are mathematically knocked out and the games become lopsided, I could see, just like they used Ryan Nassib, remember, in that Minnesota game, it got out of hand. But I don't think the philosophy is going to be 6-7 games into the season that we're now going to all of a sudden go into a different direction with our quarterback.
I agree. It's too early in the season to discuss this, but I will tell you, as I did make my bold prediction before the year, Davis Webb will see regular season snaps this season. I do believe there is some value in getting him some snaps by the end of the year because you at least give him some flavor of what regular season NFL football is all about going into 2018. It's my belief as we sit here right now that Eli Manning has played well enough over the first month or so of the season that he will be the Giants' starting quarterback in 2018. The question for me now becomes, is Davis Webb have enough or shown enough or made the Giants believe enough in him where he can be the number two quarterback in 2018 and that they don't have to keep a number three around and that they can use that roster spot for another functional player at a different position? I think that's something you have to be thinking about as you get toward the end of this season. Can we get Davis Webb some time, okay, as coaches? Can we get him some time to give us enough of a look to know that next year he's the number two? To me, it's not about seeing if he's the franchise quarterback now. You got to take baby steps with this.
And you're not going to see that. You're still not going to see whether or not a guy's a franchise quarterback in late-game situations here or there.
You may not be able to see it, but you're going to get a better indication if he is. I mean, having the great quarterbacks coming out of college may be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for a team to draft. So the Giants need to know if they should do that, if they should use that top draft pick, if they do have it, on a quarterback.
I will tell you this. It's my belief, and I know that the Giants organization has a lot of faith in Davis Webb. They think extremely highly of him, and they really did take him with the thought that he will wind up becoming the heir to Eli Manning. With that in mind, if you want to play hypothetical with me and say the Giants are going to have a top five pick, I'm telling you right now, I'm not taking any of those quarterbacks. I'm not. I'm going for either the best stud SOB left tackle that's available in the draft so that I can help fortify the offensive line, or maybe I'm making a trade and see if somebody's desperate for one of those guys, and I move down a few spots, and maybe I get myself a couple extra draft picks. The last thing I'm doing is taking one of those college quarterbacks. Davis Webb is the guy I'd be committed to, and I would not draft one of those quarterbacks this spring.
Having a great quarterback is the number one thing a team has to do. Look at Texas. I mean, you know, they have the best defensive player in the league. What's their record? They still weren't winning.
Will, I'll give you an example. What about the Saints? Saints have Drew Brees. They have no defense.
And they don't have much of an offensive line either.
Yeah, I completely disagree with the philosophy. We'll let you continue, Will, that the quarterback alone is the most important facet of a team.
It's not.
Yes, it's important, but to say that it's the only thing and once you solidify that, you're fine, I can give you a lot of teams that have no defenses.
Franchise quarterback without an offensive line or without a good defense or without a running game, guess what? He's swimming upstream the entire time. Yep. That's suicide.
It's not the only thing, but it's the most important thing by a long shot. Having one great quarterback or having four great defensive linemen, whatever.
Were you around in 1990? Are you old enough to remember Super Bowl 25?
I'm old enough to remember Y.A. Tittle getting his
Chicago. You remember 1964, obviously, and Tittle got the living stuffing beat out of him. I know he was older, but that wasn't very fair to him. Jeff Hostetler won Super Bowl 25. Jeff Hostetler was a good NFL quarterback. Over the years, he proved he was good. Was he a superstar? No. You don't need a superstar franchise quarterback necessarily to win. You need somebody who's good. And if you got the other pieces, you're going to be a champion.
Yeah, if you got the other pieces. But the other pieces, like a good defense, entails a lot more people than just one.
Well, understood. Understood, but
yeah, but Will,
on the team.
Will, there's examples, but there's examples of plenty of other teams that have taken their quarterbacks in the mid to late rounds, and they've prioritized other spots in free agency. Tom Brady, Dak Prescott. I mean, there's tons of guys, and we appreciate the phone call, Will. Want to try to get more people in on the program. I think losing sight of the other facets of teams and focusing solely on the quarterback is where teams get screwed.
Especially with the Giants having offensive line struggles as they have for years. If you have an opportunity at a very high first-round pick and there is a Jonathan Ogden type or an Anthony Munoz type, and folks, let me just say this. I have not studied the college draft yet, okay? It's October, for goodness sakes. I'm nowhere near going there yet. But I would tell you, philosophically speaking, if there is a Godzilla-type offensive lineman that is an absolutely cannot-miss Anthony Munoz-type guy, I'm all for it in the top five picks. The last thing I'm doing, and this I will tell you unequivocally, as I sit here right now, there's no way I'm taking one of those quarterbacks. Davis Webb is the guy that I'm committed to.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Jimmy is in Toledo. Jimmy, what's happening?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Doing all right, Jimmy. What do you got for us?
I'm glad you guys brought up the 11-5 record from last season, because that's what I wanted to talk about. It seems over the last month, mainly Deal and Russ have been asking fans, hey, were you happy with 11-5 last year? And they do this anytime anyone calls and talks about McAdoo. My answer to that is no, I was not happy with 11-5 last year. I think that's a 12-4 team, maybe even better, if Tom Coughlin's still there. I think there's a direct correlation between Coughlin leaving. I mean, and you can see it in Jacksonville. I mean, Jacksonville looks like a legit team this year. I think a lot of people, you know, are underestimating the influence Tom Coughlin had on this offense. So, I mean, I guess I'd like to hear your take on that.
Well, I don't think there's no doubt that Tom Coughlin had a huge impact on this organization. I don't disagree with anything you said. I mean, it's still very early in the season for the Jaguars. I think they're off to a very good start. I think their defense has turned the corner. In fairness, though, if you are going to build the parallel between what's going on in Jacksonville and what could have happened with the Giants, in fairness, Tom Coughlin's not the head coach there. Doug Marrone is. Now, I'm not saying that Coughlin's not having an impact, but there is a distinct difference, in fairness, Jimmy, when you are in the front office versus you're on the field day-to-day with the team. So to give Tom Coughlin full credit and just overlook Doug Marrone, I think is a little unfair and a little misleading. To say that an 11-5 team versus a 12-4 team with Coughlin last season is going to then beat the Packers or go on much further, I don't know necessarily if I would say that, because here's the thing. Tom Coughlin was the head coach in 2015. Now, I understand it was a completely different defense, but they were also losing a lot of close games just like they're losing here in 2017. And close games is not necessarily all the time about coaching. It's about the execution or the lack thereof of the players. And I think we're seeing that in two different seasons in the span of 3 years.
Let's not forget that in 2016, you know, that was the first year that Ben had both hats.
Yeah.
The previous two seasons, Eli performed extremely well. They were 6th-rated offense in 2015, 13th-rated offense in 2014 when Ben was the offensive coordinator, and Tom had the headset on, and all he did offensively was he'd hear the play, and if he wanted to change it, which he did not do very much, he would chime in and say, oh, no, let's do something else. It was still Ben McAdoo's offense. So you can't ignore, for all you want to say about last year not being a great offensive season, you can't ignore the previous two offensive seasons when Ben was pulling the strings, running that offense for Eli, and they were going up and down the field. You just can't do it.
I would, just to counter that point, I agree with what you're saying, but I don't know if it's McAdoo being this great offensive guru or if it was just the Odell Beckham show. You could see it in the game that he, you know, I think it was Minnesota, he was hurt and didn't play. I mean, that was one of the worst games I've ever watched. It was so bad that we put Nassib in at the end of the game. And then you saw it again this year in the Dallas game. I mean, we only put up 3 points without Odell. So, I mean, he had such a historic rookie season. I just, I think that skews the stats of McAdoo as a coordinator.
And I understand the point. I don't begrudge you for trying to make that point, but let me ask you this. If you have one of the most explosive, dynamic players in the National Football League, why wouldn't you use him? Why wouldn't you go to him? And don't you think it would make a tremendous difference on your team if he's not on the field? Because let's face it, what makes him such a superstar and such a great player is that he is miles better than anybody else on the field. So aren't you supposed to miss him when he's not there?
Oh, yeah. You're right. I was just making the point. With as much money as we – that was the most money we spent in free agency. I mean, I would think in the whole time Coughlin would have been here, I just would have liked to have seen what he could have done with the roster.
And that's fair.
I think
that's a fair statement.
I can guarantee you no one would have been going on a boat trip with Coughlin at the helm.
Thanks for letting me talk, Jimmy, guys.
Appreciate the call.
Yes, sir. And I will just answer that caller as he goes off the air in two ways. It's fair to think about what Tom might have done with this team, and it's also fair to say, gee, Ben's best 2 years running the Giants offense were when he was the coordinator, and in the 2 years he's had both hats, it hasn't worked out as well. That's also fair to say. Those are facts. Those are facts. And I have no problem dealing with the facts.
No, I'm in agreement. I think a number of fair points that the caller brought up. But, you know, as I countered, I think it's also premature to just make assumptions that if Coughlin was here, things would be drastically different.
You can't.
And
it's
the
hypothetical.
Same thing in 16.
It's hypothetical.
Those are hypotheticals.
But it's a fair question to ponder.
No doubt. No doubt at all. But, once again, what's going on in Jacksonville should not be overlooked.
No.
But as I pointed out, Paul, there is a significant difference between being in the executive chair versus being the head coach and operating on a daily basis with your players.
No doubt.
Definitely a difference. All right, let's head back to lines. Marco is in Connecticut. Marco, what do you got for us?
Guys, great to be with you after what's been a terrible week here with the Giants. Great show today. I mean, every caller
has brought up so many things
that I want to talk about. Just last thing about what you said about Jacksonville, he is in the executive chair, but it's fair to say that Marone is an extension of Coughlin. I mean, they are cut from the same cloth.
Well, in terms of the core philosophy, the running
game.
The trenches, looking at Marone's background, Marco, I don't disagree with anything you said, and I'm sure they have discussions on a daily basis like most coaches and GMs do.
Yeah.
But I do think that there is a significant more impact that a coach can have when he has that specific label than versus when you're a general manager, because you're allowing your coach to have more of an interaction on a daily basis with the players.
Agreed. You both brought up some things that I wanted to just address. Paul, the stuff that you guys just talked about with the draft and a quarterback and Webb is two things on that. One, I can't believe we're talking about that 5 weeks in. That just goes to show where the current state of the team, where it's very odd that we have 11 games to play, but yet you can't not talk about next year because there's so many things that are unsettling for fans.
And that's why, actually, it's very, very difficult to do that because for all the questions you want to raise right now, there are so many different roads that this thing could go down. It's impossible to be responsible and truly discuss what you think might happen. You got a better chance of hitting the lottery tomorrow.
I really want to talk about the team right now, but I just want to say something, though, and I want to challenge you to think, just keep an open mind to this.
Yeah.
Right? I agree with you about the quarterback and Webb, right, because I know I follow the team closely. I know how strongly they feel about him.
Yeah.
But would it be fair to say that, for starters, the team did not envision themselves picking highly in the draft next year? Would that be fair to say?
Sure.
Okay. Now, when that happens, you could throw everything out the window. And I'm listening to you saying, like, let's go get a great offensive tackle. But college football has not brought out these great offensive tackles. They haven't.
Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead, finish.
No. Because this is a quick point, which is why I think we haven't in the last year, this past draft or last draft, we haven't really gone out, or free agency and last draft, we didn't go out and get an offensive lineman. So I will just say this. This reminds me very closely about like what the Spurs did when David when they had David Robinson and they drafted Tim Duncan. You don't know. You're not thinking, hey, we might be a top five team next year. Like Cleveland Browns could think that way. But the New York Giants never in their minds since Eli would thought that they'd be up here with the possibility of having to draft a quarterback. So I just would say keep an open mind to it, because there might be someone there who comes out and ends up being better than Davis Webb, and the Giants say, hey, listen, we have to draft the best available. You just don't know what can happen.
Well, Marco, we'll let you go on that point because we want to get to a few more callers. And I would agree with you there. I think you never remove any option from the table, especially this early. I mean, it's hard to believe we're even speculating about the draft at this point. You know, just like, for example, the Bears, when they went out and signed Mike Glennon, they did not anticipate that they were going to be able to then pull off an opportunity to draft Mitchell Trubisky. When the Eagles brought in Chase Daniel and Sam Bradford, they didn't necessarily anticipate that Carson Wentz was going to be an option. So you always have to look at decisions are made in the now, not necessarily having a crystal ball knowing what's coming down the line. So I agree with Marco's point there. But I also don't think that as an organization, and I'm talking broadly here, that any organization could go in to a draft when they have a high pick and say, well, the best prospect is a quarterback, so we definitely have to take the quarterback. I think they have to explore their options. If the best option is, as Paul alluded to move down and get a boatload of draft picks that can help address a number of different issues, you know, that would also be a wise move to consider too.
Yeah, right now, according to one of the draft services that I use, Mike McGlinchey from Notre Dame is the number one rated offensive tackle going into the draft at this point.
Which is going to change tremendously.
In the next 3 months, absolutely, yes. It's going to change. But he is graded as a late first rounder as the number one offensive tackle on the board. So that at this point would prohibit the drafting of necessarily a tackle in the top five. Now, of course, this list that's coming out does not include any junior eligibles because they haven't declared yet. That those guys will declare. I don't know if there are any junior eligibles. Again, I do FCS football for, you know, as my side job. I don't look at draft boards at this point of the fall. But maybe there is somebody there. If there is, you certainly have to explore it.
All right, I want to squeeze in a few more phone calls before we wrap up. Jay's in Brooklyn. Jay, what's happening?
Hey, Lance, I think you made a great point with the fact that the team is 0-5 and there's a lot of media vultures that are circling the team right now. And the fact is that sometimes when they say a guy's lost the team, that it's usually nonsense. However, in this scenario, I also believe that where there's smoke, there's fire. When Eli Apple goes out and challenges the coach in the media and basically says he's challenging the culture and he's blaming the coach for being a scapegoat, when Janoris Jenkins walks off the field before the game is over, when Odell Beckham does what he does and doesn't think about the coach at all and the after effects to the point where the owner has to come down and reprimand the player and not the coach, and now this latest incident with DRC, you have to, just observing this, you have to wonder if the respect for the coach exists in that locker room.
There are 11 games to go, and I think everybody in this organization, as well as around the league, will be watching very, very carefully, because this is the first real bit of football adversity that Ben McAdoo has had to navigate since he became head coach last season. Okay? I'm talking about actual football stuff in the locker room. I mean, this is a significant detour sign. This is like somebody blew up the bridge, you know, ahead.
And now you got to find another way to
cross. And you got to find another way to cross. Yeah. How is he going to cross this? Because right now, it's not good. Everything is falling apart. So now, how does he respond? How does he navigate? What does he learn from this? What does he do to change it? These next 11 games are going to tell us a whole lot. And I think everybody needs to keep their eyes open and watch. And I don't think it's fair to make a judgment right now, because we don't know what the next 2.5 months are going to bring.
Now, if you want to look...
I agree with you, Paul, wholeheartedly. But in the same token, usually when a player does wrong, you know, he thinks about letting his team down first and then letting his coach down, where he's worried about the wrath of his coach. I'm worried that these guys don't seem to... They're not worried about the wrath of their coach.
We're going to find out. We're going to find out. Look, no problem. I want to add one thing. Bill Parcells used to say it all the time back in the 80s. Bill used to tell us all the time, you don't know about a quarterback until he has one of those four interception games. He'd sit there with a cigarette. You know, fellas, that's when you find out about a guy. After he throws four picks or after he goes on a three or four game losing streak. Until then, you have no idea what that quarterback is about. Well, guess what? Now we got to start finding out about what this coach is about. And that's fair.
Well, and you could say the same thing about sometimes you don't learn about a team until they maybe go on a three or a four game losing streak and see how they bounce back. Because remember, I'm not making excuses for any of these players. Eli Apple came from Ohio State, and then he won 11 games his first year in the NFL. Paul, going back to high school, I'm just talking off the top of my head. How many losing seasons do you think Eli Apple has ever experienced in the course of his football career?
Tell me about it. How about
this
Wayne
uncharted
Goldman,
territory? Wayne
Clemson,
Goldman.
Two national championship games.
So the point is, this is territory that a lot of these players are not used to. So they're not used to being in locker rooms where you're having to deal with bouncing back from one loss and another loss. And once again, I'm not building an excuse. It's just a matter of bringing perspective to the table. I think what the last caller brought up, Jay, I think is very fair. And if you go back to 2013 when the Giants lost six games in a row, I don't remember hearing about some of these issues or players, you know, getting irritated and this and that, and then they bounce back, they won four in a row. It's a different roster, so maybe that comparison doesn't go so far. But going back to the premise that we started the program off with, I am more concerned about what I'm seeing from an X's and O's standpoint on the field, much more so than the chatter in the media. What I mean by that is when guys start quitting and not showing 100% effort on the field, Paul, then I would say you have a problem.
Watch the game tape and believe what you see.
Watch the film. Then we've got some more substance in this conversation.
That's it.
We have not gotten to that point.
Nope.
But the microscope is still there, in all fairness. Let's head back to the lines. Mike's in Virginia. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, how are you gentlemen doing today?
Doing all right, Mike. What do you got for us?
I'd like to point out with the offense, the only issue I've really ever had was, you know, when he was offensive coordinator, Dave pointed out a couple days ago, there's no way that people were upset that we were scoring that many points. Those 2 years, we were what? I heard Paul say it earlier, we were a top 10, and then we went to a 13, I believe.
Stayed consistent in 14 and 15.
And,
Sixth and 13.
It's to a point where it seems like the NFL, the defenses have caught up with our offense, and that's why they're able to stop us, and he does not make good adjustments. That's the only issue I honestly can say, because I gave it, I mean, the first year was fabulous. The second year, it was good. And then the third year, and then now, it seems like they caught up to our offense. They're running a specific defense to stop us, and he cannot get past that. Granted, yes, there are holes on the line, but there were holes on the line back then as well. So it was one of those things where, just like a rookie quarterback that's having a great year, hey, let's see how he does the next year when the tape is out on him. Okay, and the tape came out on our offense, and people have been able to stop us since then, and the adjustment is bad. I'd like to touch on, it's hard to say that he's not losing the locker room the way things are going, because again, I'm a big Coughlin fan. You just didn't have these problems. I played college ball. I played in the military. There's certain things that I'm seeing with these players where it's just like, oh, man, you don't come out. You don't. There's certain things you just don't do. And these issues never happened with Coughlin.
Well, Mike, here's where I think it's important to at least be fair. You know, Beckham had the whole thing with the Carolina Panthers. Tom Coughlin was here with Josh Norman.
Yes,
okay, so I mean, you got to look at it through that lens. And I'll bring up another team. What about what's going on with the Pittsburgh Steelers and Antonio Brown and on the sideline and what Mike Tomlin's had to deal with over the years, and the Steelers have still found ways to win games and still be in the playoff hunt. So, I mean, there are teams that always deal with their fair share of minutiae, as I like to call it, or, you know, media frenzy, and it's the teams that can overcome that, and as long as it doesn't impact what's going on the field. And listen, Mike, there's some background noise we're hearing. We're going to let you go on that note. Do appreciate the phone call because we are closing in on the end of the program. Want to get to one more, and that's Mike in Florida. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, guys. I want to be a little bit cynical about the organization being really behind Webb, because this was the same organization that, if I remember correctly, really thought that we had two tackles that were going to improve tremendously and going to do, you know, go wonders. So I just don't think that I find a lot of comfort in saying that they're really behind behind Webb.
Bill
Polian, I don't think they're a good judge of talent.
Bill Polian, Hall of Famer, okay, Hall of Fame front office executive, said if you hit on one of three draft picks over the course of your drafting career, that's considered a really good percentage in the NFL. So you're right. There's no sure thing. There is absolutely no sure thing. I mean, Tony Mandarich was supposed to be the next coming of King Kong. And what happened to Tony Mandarich? You think the Packers are happy with him? The way that worked out many years ago. So you want to play that game, you're more than welcome to, because there's no 100% surefire, guaranteed, lock stock, this is the next superstar. You want to play that game, you're certainly entitled to, but, it's foolish because you can say that about every player who's ever come out of college.
Yeah, but I'm more cynical of the front office. I don't think that Reese is a good drafter. I don't think that he's built a good team. So putting Webb, having faith in Webb is one thing. Putting Webb out there with the line that we have, he's going to get killed. Yeah, maybe he can run around a little bit more. Maybe he'll be as mobile as Russell Wilson behind an erratic line. But I think it's a real mistake to think that Webb is going to be a salvation unless we get rid of Jerry Reese. And I think that's the first move.
All right, Mike, appreciate the phone call. First of all, if Webb was to take over, I'm sure the offensive line is going to look very differently by the time he would take over. So it's hard to say that, you know, you're going to put him behind the same offensive line when rosters are going to turn over and change when he is ready to be the successor if he's given that opportunity.
There's a chance none of the five will
That's
be
why
here.
I'm saying.
Because the
so
earliest ETA for Webb, earliest that he would be a starter
in terms of taking over,
would
yeah.
be 2019.
Yeah, so I
in
mean,
theory, because I know – The thinking, I think, now is Eli's going to start next year.
I don't see why
so,
not.
So, you know, 2 years out are hard to predict. So maybe in 2 years, if Webb is the lead guy, and how do you know any of these five offensive linemen are still here?
That's what I'm saying.
You don't know.
So, I mean, we got to see what the offensive line looks like before we say, well, Webb would be in trouble if he has to play behind these specific players. I think we're really getting ahead of ourselves with respect to that.
Hey, Johnny, you would be in trouble behind this offensive line.
Well, just like most running backs would have trouble depending on how an offensive line performs, no matter how talented they are.
All right.
It needs to be a team effort. Do appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets. Thanks so much for tuning in. Big Blue Kickoff Live up and running tomorrow. John Schmelk and I will take you through all the latest news and look ahead to the Broncos game on Sunday Night Football. Always good going back and forth, Paul.
God fun, Lance.
All right. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.